Margaret Thatcher once said, "Power is like being a lady. If you have to tell people you are, you aren't." Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, EE Journal's longstanding podcast, hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. So in honor of the old Iron Lady herself, we're digging into the world of power today, from power integrity prevention to near-threshold voltage computing. All right, so first up, let's bring in Kenneth Chang from Synopsys, who is bringing us the goods on their Red Hawk Analysis Fusion and how it can help you get your power sign-off under control and taken care of earlier in your next design. Let's go. My guest today is Kenneth Chang from Synopsys. Thank you so much for joining me, Kenneth.
Oh, thank you very much, Amelia.
Okay, so let's talk about everyone's favorite subject, power integrity and reliability. But before we jump into the solutions here, let's talk about the problems. Now, IR drop and issues with EM quality can cause a large range of issues in chip design. What specific problems are you seeing in this realm?
So what we see is bad as a chip failure, companies that can't finish their chip and they have to redo their design. And then there's also delay of project, you know, a whole slew of problems. But I'd say the chip failure is the potentially worst one.
So there's some prevention techniques that can be used to mitigate these risks, right?
Correct. Some of our users are doing things like beefing up the power grid, for example, to prevent issues. But those things are not foolproof and cause issues downstream.
So tell me, what kind of issues are there that would be caused downstream?
Examples are that the designs may become bigger, takes up extra resources that might be needed downstream in order to close the design.
Now, you guys are taking this prevention to the next level by introducing these power integrity and reliability checks earlier in the design flow. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so historically, in smaller geometries, for example, like, say, 40 nanometers and above, power has been more of an option. Some people are using power sign-off as something that's in their flow. But as you're moving towards advanced nodes, things are becoming a lot more complicated. Power is becoming a necessity. Power sign-off is becoming more important. And what the designers are seeing is that you can't just do it at sign-off. It's actually something you have to do beforehand.
Okay, so let's talk about your Red Hawk Analysis Fusion. So what is that all about and what kind of adoption have you guys been seeing?
So what Red Hawk Analysis Fusion does is it pushes the sign-off quality engines and the results and the accuracy, shifting it left into the flow. So what that means is it's pushing it into the physical design flow as early as the beginning of floor planning, when you're doing course placement, carrying through your clock tree stage, your placement stage, to your detail route stages that you typically may be doing this already at, and even more so at the block level. So typically sign-off is done when things are integrated as a full view, and that's what we see from our customers. But what they want more, and what's different about what we're offering, is the ability for all the physical designers to work as early as in the flow, as early as floor planning, at the block level design, which is very, very early, and it helps de-risk the things that I talked about earlier in terms of mitigating the risks of late schedules and failed designs.
Okay, Kenneth, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. I know you're a cooking connoisseur. You enjoy some seafood. If you had a signature seafood dish, what would it be?
Definitely lobster with a little bit of garlic, dipped nicely in hot water.
Okay, sign me up. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Kenneth.
Yeah, thank you very much, Millie. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Next up, please welcome Lari Koskinen from Minima. Lari and I are chatting all about the bells, the bobs, the whistles, the adaptivity of near-threshold voltage computing. Intrigued? I thought so. Hi, Lari. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first off, give my audience a bit of information about what you guys are all about and what led to the formation of Minima in Finland.
Well, Finland actually, is a very technical country. We had a company, Nokia, which was at its biggest point 40% of the GDP. So that's much more than, for example, in the US. So that means that there's actually a lot of technological background in there, and then multiple technical universities. And even though Nokia nowadays is not doing so hot, you know, there's a number of different teams were left behind, so to say, of Nokia. That said, I don't have a Nokia background. So my background is in academia, both in two universities, Aalto University and University of Turku. In Finland, I changed teams at some point. And I also did a short stint in UC Berkeley over here in the Bay Area. Essentially, this is a classical case of funding the researchers and then getting business out of it. So this started as an Academy of Finland project, which you could think of as the NSA over here. So very sciencey type of funding. And we did that for, I think, six-ish years. And after that, then Tekes stepped in. And Tekes is more than science to business and business to business type of funding. And that then funded for a year more to really look at the business side of this. And after that, Minima was born. So there is a lot of this type of governmental funding, which not too much, you know, lift my own tail here, but this is the classic case of where it really worked, and we've already gotten more funding both from the investors and then from EU support than we ever got from the Finnish government, so they must be happy now,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about how you guys minimize energy consumption in your chips. What is your IP all about?
So what we essentially do is we allow the chips to operate at a lower voltage. Now, the voltage is essentially something that comes out of the battery. The chips nowadays operate at a certain voltage, which is about 1 volt. And energy is quadratic to this operating voltage. So that means that if you halve the voltage, then you get 4x energy improvements. And that's essentially the very simple physical science of what we do, is that we allow operation at a very low voltage, and you can get by, on a best case, from going from a very high voltage, which would be over 1 to very low, to about 0.3. So there's something like a 15x best case. That marketing info said you probably will not be able to get those kinds of numbers in the real world use cases, but there's still a number of X's, you know, 2x, 4x, that you can get in real world use cases. How our IP operates is we call it slightly adaptive. So there are things like asynchronous to go to the far end. We're nothing like that. We essentially let the system define its own operating point. And why you need adaptivity is because the problem in going to low voltage is actually variance. The variance itself doesn't really change, but the susceptibility to variance. And what variance means here is that you go to low voltage and you know that the chip will operate, but you don't actually know will it be a fast chip or a slow chip. And while these problems exist at nominal voltage, they get hugely multiplied in the low voltage domain. So that's where the adaptivity, to go back, that's where it comes in, because you don't really know how fast the chip will be. Then the chip really defines its own operating point in the sense of the voltage, guarantees the performance that the application needs. And the IP is really a vertical solution, so it's both a hardware and a software solution. So there's a number of things going on. We simple IP on the very low level, so going on almost a transistor level. We add some small stuff there. And then there's a number of feedback loops built on top of that. And in the end, the operating system really understands what's going on under the hood and is able to minimize the energy.
Very cool. Okay, so it seems like near threshold voltage computing is too good to be true. Lori, what's the catch here?
Well, the catch is the variance, exactly. If you design these things conventionally, which is essentially you'd look at the worst case and then just margin that in, near threshold voltage will never work. You can do a number of things to mitigate that. One is really do the grunt, you know, low-level work. And there are a number of companies that where you redesign a number of things, essentially the gate library, and then you do conventional design on top of that. So, like I mentioned, we're different in the sense that we don't really change the fundamentals, aka the library, but we design on top of that, but then we have the adaptivity and the self-determination of the operating point.
Okay, so let's talk about some applications for this approach. What are you looking at here?
What you want as a sweet spot for this is really something that's always on. So the absolutely perfect case is what's called voice wake up or wake word or things like that, and you guys all have that. So it's your OK Google, it's your Hey Alexa, these kinds of things. So when your mobile phone has to be ready to hear your Hey Alexa, that means that it's always on. It's always listening to you. And the voice wake up is actually it's not a super difficult problem, something like artificial intelligence, but it's also not a very simple problem. So it needs somewhat horsepower from the underlying processors. And that essentially is a sweet spot for us. So something that is always on, but still needs somewhat horsepower. Something like video is also good. That needs even more architectural horsepower from the processors. But then more conventional things like the simple radios of Bluetooth, they're still digital there, and we can bring that energy down. But the gains will be best in these things that are always on and always doing something.
That makes sense. All right, Laurie, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. I know you're an Oakland Raiders fan, so how do you feel about the big move over to Vegas from Oakland?
Well, for me, they're the LA Raiders. So I used to live in LA as a kid, and I went back to Finland from LA as a kid, and there was no internet. I'm an old guy. So it was probably 15 years since I got any information from the NFL. And then I look at the paper, I'm like, Oakland Raiders? What's this Oakland? I've never heard of it. So, you know, looking from Finland, they're still the same distance, you know. So Las Vegas, LA, Oakland, you know. So I don't feel that bad about it, but as long as they win the Super Bowl.
There you go. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Laurie.
Thank you.
Power pop quiz time. What is a micro slick? No, it's not a really small raincoat. That's kind of what I thought first. No, it is a new ultra-small power module that can deliver smaller solution size, higher reliability, and higher power density. And I'm talking about these modules with John Woodward from Maxim Integrated in a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Maxim's Himalaya MicroSlick Solution, the industry's smallest power modules. If you're in the market for a super tiny, powerfully packed power module for your next design, you'll definitely want to check out this episode of Chalk Talk. And you can do that by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal, can't miss it, right across the top, or truck on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out that Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 17th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.